From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs. I am Seth Kaiser with The Athletic. I'm here today with two of my very favorite people in the world, Ryan Tracy with RGR Football and Chris Clark, who basically writes everywhere at this point. Chris, quick question. Are there any websites that you are currently not writing for?
I'm just going to leave blank space to help with that. So, yeah.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, okay, there's a lot to talk about, and that's why they put the pastor lawyer in charge of this episode, because Lord knows, if there's one thing people say about me that they compliment me on, it's my brevity. So,
oh, yeah.
So, all right, first things first, I mean, there's been a lot of chat about it, but I want to talk about it a little bit more. I know a little bit of your guys' opinions, but I want to hear more. Chris, the game has been moved from Mexico to LA. Thoughts?
Thank goodness. Honestly, no, and I wish there was more that I could really say. I mean, there's so many different words that are four-letter words that I would say if Kansas City went to that in Mexico City and Hill got hurt or Jones got hurt or Ford got hurt or Kelsey got hurt or all of them got hurt or worst comes to worst. I'm not even going to say worst comes to worst.
No, don't put that out in the universe.
Yeah, I'm not putting that juju out there. I am just very happy that they made the right decision. That field is not something that you can tell me that an NFL team has any business playing on. And with what this game really means to the NFL, it shouldn't be anywhere other than in LA. So
sure.
I'm happy that they moved it.
Okay, Ryan, what do you think? You agree, disagree? Do you miss the time when men were men and football fields were mud?
Nope. I like knees. I like them intact.
Sure.
you know, and I said it the other day, that field was a mess. It's been terrible forever. The thing that I will say this, there was a lot of skepticism about the NFL doing the right thing. I think it did get prompted by the team and the players having something to say about it. I think it was good that they tried to bring in the NFLPA. Because they have to look out for player safety more so than the league does, because the league's got a product to sell. But yep. I think overall, for the first time in quite a long time, I think everybody got together and made the right decision.
Yeah, this was kind of a win-win-win. I will say it is interesting to me because everyone's so concerned about that field when there is literally a stadium that has dirt all over it. I mean, they play 8 games a year in Oakland. Let's be real.
Not for long.
Not for long. Yeah. Totally true. But my thing was, I do think this became one of those kind of like things, like causes type things, which is fine because I do think that there was an increased chance of injury, especially if what they were going to do was put in a bunch of new sod and hope that it takes root. Because the problem is new sod looks great, but it can be a little more movable. And that's where I think the danger lies, someone sinking a foot 3 feet into it. Maybe not 3 feet. I may be exaggerating there. So I'm right there with you guys. I think this is the first time I remember the NFL doing something that everyone was like, oh, okay, good job, NFL.
Hey.
Well, to me, I guess what I look at this as is the NFL looked at it and said, we can't have a PR nightmare. And it's a PR nightmare if Kansas City or LA go to Mexico City and lose any of their big players in a game that shouldn't have never been played there to begin with.
Or if they refuse to play, which I sat there and I thought about this because this game obviously means a lot to both the Chiefs and the Rams in terms of seeding. Here's the thing. The Chiefs have a couple game lead on the Patriots, or a game and a half, I guess, because the Patriots beat them head to head. But they've got a game and a half lead on the Chargers. They could have a draw and it wouldn't affect their playoff picture that much. And so could the Rams. And that would have been an interesting thing. Like, hey, how about we just don't do this? You know? And that would have been an even bigger PR nightmare. So I think we're all in agreement. Well, that's boring. So let's shift to something else that we all would probably agree on anyway. Guys, I gotta do it. I gotta talk about Patrick Mahomes. I got this it.
No.
I got this it. I need to talk about Patrick Mahomes. So I had a bunch of people in my mentions asking me about the differences between Mahomes and Breeze, right? Drew Breeze. Or Mahomes and Breeze. Anyway.
You mean the leading candidate for MVP?
And he might be. Look, Breeze has been incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he looks great. But I had people asking me, and I'm not sure where this started from. I think I might know, but I don't really care that much, so I'm just whatever. The idea that Mahomes is just throwing to a bunch of wide open receivers, whereas Breeze is apparently doing nothing but throwing into a ton of tight windows.
There is a person that is not to be named on this podcast, by the way, and I think you know who I mean.
Okay, maybe. I'm not sure.
You don't get along with him anymore.
Oh, okay. You know, for the record, if this is the person I think, it's not that I don't get along with him. I nothing him. We don't talk anymore.
I'm good with that.
Oh no, someone accuses me of bullying them or whatever. I backed off, whatever. I thought this person had a terrible football opinion. Those terrible football opinions have continued. But whatever, it's not my business
to correct. Hey, wait a second. I don't bully you. I don't know what you're talking about.
Shut up, Chris.
Yeah, shut up,
Chris. Hey, now who's getting bullied?
Yeah. Oh, right. We're attacking you online. So
I just want to say for the record, for all my buddies that are listening that are in my big money league, by the way, the name of the league is Trent Green is Still God. no offense to the religious out there. But my guys are all giving me crap because I have both Mahomes and Breeze.
Nice. Too bad it's not a two-quarterback league. But here's what I wanted to talk to you guys about. Nice. Anyway, one thing that I focused on, you know, every week I do the whole supersized film review on The Athletic. And this week, what I've been trying to do is obviously I chart every snap by Mahomes. I chart all the things that I've done forever and ever, amen. But I've also been trying to focus on like one specific aspect in every film review. And this week, the big thing was eye movement and body movement and how Mahomes is manipulating defenses at a level that almost no other quarterback is. And so I'm curious. So do you guys by any chance remember the first pass of the game that Mahomes completed to Tyreek Hill down the left side?
Yes.
You frustrate me.
I do. So
because now I have to do the other play that I was going to do for the film review on RGR. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But you can do no, he's not. Don't believe him.
Was it a 3rd and 10 to Robinson? Because I might ruin that one too.
No, I was just looking at the touchdown deep through the middle because he held that safety as well.
He held that safety as well. So if you look at the film, if you watch what happens on that play, the Cardinals, wow, that was a tough thing. They were in single high, and Tyreek Hill torched Patrick Peterson on the left side, right? Now, here's the issue, though. The deep safety was definitely leaning towards providing help deep. Peterson thought he had help over the top. What Mahomes does, he took his not just his eyes, his whole body, and faced the right side of the field. And then he kind of looked, then he faced center again, kind of did a little play fake as though he were throwing towards the middle of the field. And he froze the deep safety there. Only then, and this is as pressure's closing in on him, did he flick his wrist to make an incredible throw, dropped it right into a bucket to Hill. And then all people see, oh, the deep safety was late coming over. He wasn't. He was held there by Patrick Mahomes. If you are wondering why guys look so wide open when Mahomes is throwing to them, part of that is Andy Reid's a genius. But you know what? So is Sean Payton. But a big part of it is that Mahomes does a better job manipulating zone defenders than almost any other quarterback in the league. And I had to talk about that.
He's only 23.
I know. It's hilarious.
No, I really have to say this because I knew where you're going with this before you started talking about it, but this is something that we've seen from him multiple games in a row now. Mm-hmm. His touchdown pass last week to Kelsey, not the fantastic throw that he could only fit in a 6-inch window, but the other one,
yep.
He froze. I believe it was a safety, and that was the only reason Kelsey was open.
Absolutely.
He froze him. He had his entire body turned away from where Kelsey was going to open up and be at, and then hit it at the very last second.
You know, Chris, I want to keep hearing you agreeing with me. First, we're going to take a quick break. We can talk about this for just another minute or two, and then we're going to talk about what is the game of the year so far from the Chiefs' perspective.
Are you looking to reach new customers? I could be mentioning your business right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with their sponsors than on web pages or other forms of media. Our demographic is 98% males and offers more opportunities than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast today. Email us at lockedonchiefs@gmail.com.
All right. Chris was telling me how smart I am. Chris, go. I'm kidding.
I'm Team Ryan, so just want to throw that out there.
You're a bad person and you should feel bad. the thing is, you're right. He's 23. And here's the interesting thing. One of the picks that he threw in the preseason was because he stared down a wide receiver. But what you see now.
Oh, yeah. The Falcons pick.
Yep. Even now on plays where he doesn't need to look off defenders, he's still doing it. That's how practiced he is at it. And I was just curious, you know, so Chris gave his thoughts. Ryan, do you see Mahomes doing that, or am I just drinking the Kool-Aid here?
No, I see it. I see it pretty consistently, especially when it's anything over like, you know, a 15-yard pattern that he's looking at. And that's why it's hard to pull out plays, because there's plenty to choose from. And it's just the fact that for a guy that always had that problem of throwing stuff over the middle, throwing interceptions over the middle when he didn't see guys, this ability that he's seemed to have drilled into him to always be moving your eyes to manipulate the defense, mm-hmm. I think that's really important for him in particular because of his penchant for those lurking safety linebacker types.
Absolutely. And it's something that most quarterbacks don't learn to do well for years. And so I understand, because I know Next Gen Stats was showing like that he didn't throw into as many tight windows as other quarterbacks, which is absolutely true. But here's the thing. That's not just because he's got great playmakers, and it's not just because it's Andy Reid. It's because he's creating windows and he's throwing guys open. You know, when you put the ball
in the spot, and he's putting the ball in places where their players aren't even at yet.
Correct.
I mean, his second touchdown to Tyreek Hill is a great example of that. And I saw you tweet about it earlier mm-hmm. on Tuesday. I hadn't had a chance to really say anything about it. But that play looked like he threw it into quadruple coverage mm-hmm. by the end of the play. Obviously, it wasn't, mm-hmm. But there were three defenders within 5 yards of Hill by the time he caught that ball.
Right.
But he hadn't even got out of his break when Mahomes started his throwing motion.
Right. And had Mahomes telegraphed that throw at all or thrown it a little later, it would have had to be a tight window throw. Throwing into tight windows isn't necessarily a sign of greatness. Sometimes it's a sign of doing things wrong before the throw. And that's one of my biggest takeaways. A few other ones is, you know, Ryan, my boy Dorian O'Daniel was in there on a few runs up the middle, and he didn't look too bad this last week.
That's true. I thought he made an improvement. He's another guy that I talked about together with that combination of Ben Neiman, who I thought is again not like the big take on dude. He reminds me a little bit more of Derek. Yep. But the combination of them as, you know, the two guys to make those combinations, to make a single player at a position next to Ragland for the most part, I thought that worked out really well.
I think so, too. They look
– Can I ask you both a question? And I know, Ryan, we kind of talked about this with Bear on the Locked on Rams show, but I do want to ask this to Seth as well, and I don't think he really gave an opinion on it. Late in the game, in the second half against the Seahawks, or against the Rams, the Seahawks were playing the Rams on Sunday. The Seahawks went to a 5-man front to stop Todd Gurley.
Yep.
Do either of you think that that is something that Kansas City is going to consider doing? Because if you make this a situation where you can stop the run, I really do think that they have the back end, at least against the wide receivers, that they'll be pretty good in coverage against Jared Goff. And they don't have a tight end, so I'm not near as worried about the tight ends as I would be if we were playing somebody that had a better tight end.
I don't know. I think you dance with the one that brung you, and you do what's been working on defense. Maybe I've been spending too much time on analytics Twitter with like running backs don't matter and stuff. And I don't fear Gurley that much. Now, again, he might go for 204 touchdowns against the Chiefs, but I think it's their scheme that's dangerous. And I,
you know, I can fix that perception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go watch the Tennessee game.
What happened in the Tennessee game?
Right. You remember that playoff loss?
Oh, sure.
Oh, rut-row. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Gurley's scarier. Oh. Okay, so I got to tell you,
mattering though, that was a case of crappy defense and an offense that couldn't move the ball. They get three firsts,
but the run game matters.
Does it only if the other team plays like crap on offense? I mean,
or crams it down your throat.
But that's not what,
well. My whole point was Todd Gurley is on a whole nother level than any other running back in the NFL outside of Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt, in my opinion. And if you can stop the running game for Los Angeles, I think that makes them a lot easier to defend But if you're having to deal with Gurley getting 6 or 7 yards, good luck ever stopping the passing game.
I think that's true. I mean, getting them in disadvantageous situations, you know, third and long, that kind of stuff. And that's what we saw against the Cardinals, right? They did a really good job stopping David Johnson on first and second down and forcing them into third and five or longer. And they were really able to tee off. Now, the Rams line is a lot better than the Cardinals line. But again, I don't know if there's a lot.
Wait, you're saying they're not going to have 26 pressures this week?
They might. I don't know. It depends on how many times they throw the ball. Because the reality is, I mean, it depends on what the Rams try to do. They are a lot different in terms of what they do than the Cardinals. And it's not going to be a situation where they're just going to try to, you know, not leave any help for the line and just watch Ford and Houston tee off on people. So at the same time, is there a pass rushing trio in the NFL scarier than Ford, Houston, and Chris Jones?
I don't think so. But let me back you up a second, because I do think that plan to try and corral Gurley early, especially in the first quarter, is important. Because of the loss to Cooper Kupp in particular, I think that their passing game is probably not going to run on all cylinders as well. And I actually want to see the Chiefs change it up. I think Bob showed that when he remembers that he can blitz people and get creative, I think it works. And I think what I want to see them do is come out in a bare front and cover both the guards and the center and take that interior run away from Gurley in the first quarter and make them throw the ball. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, the problem with blitzing their quarterback is Jared Goff. He's fantastic against the blitz this year. He's thrown for a QBR of, I think, 117. So maybe it'll work, but that's an iffy proposition. But I do like what you're saying about stopping the run.
Oh, the difficulty.
Told you I was Team Ryan.
Being the only forward-thinking member of the podcast. I told you, I understand, you know, the idea. Here's the thing. What does a great day from a running back look like? Averaging what? 5.5 yards a carry? 6 yards a carry?
Against this defense, 9.
When has that ever happened?
We haven't played Todd Gurley yet this year, and we've been giving up 7 yards a carry.
It hasn't. That's the thing.
But they haven't played. What I'm saying is I think the player is much better than what they have played, and they've given up 7 yards a carry to some of the running backs they've already played.
I think if you'd have asked people last year if Gurley's that much better than David Johnson, I'm not sure what people would have said. If you look, Todd Gurley doesn't create yardage after contact at nearly the same rate as Melvin Gordon, as Kareem Hunt, or as any number of running backs. Now, again, he might have a great game, but it's the system that's dangerous. Gurley's a very, very, very good running back, make no mistake. But I can't buy into the idea, I really can't, that stopping the run is paramount to success when I look at the teams that are really great at stopping the run in the NFL, and it's a whole bunch of meh. Because I don't really care how many 15-play drives can they have where Gurley totes the rock the whole time and then compete with an offense that's moving at 8 yards a clip.
Well, you have a fair point, but I think what you're missing is that by stopping the run, you put that offense into third and longs.
Right.
And that's the key.
Yeah.
And that's my
whole thing is if they can get them to third and longs and then get it to where they're more of a one-dimensional team, you have a chance of stopping that offense. If you have to worry about Gurley coming out of the backfield on second or third and five, because they will run it on third and five, you're in a position where it's not going to be beneficial to your defense and you're not going to know what's coming.
I'm intrigued by all this. I do think we got to take one more break, and then I am going to take your arguments and my heel. Like Thanos. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. But we'll keep talking about this right after this. Man, that was some poetry, by the way, my outro to that last break. We're going to talk more about this right after this.
That I really thought you were going, I'm going to take your arguments and put them in my pipe and smoke them.
I'm going to put them in my pocket.
Talk for a living. That's interesting. Okay.
Me speaking good English. So I think there's some merit to the idea of stopping Gurley in the run game, especially because of the advantageous situations it can put you in on third down. Because I think third down is the name of the game here. The reality is if teams keep running the ball, all game, they will, just by the nature of what the run entails, put themselves into some second and nine, third and eight situations. They just will. That's the way the run game works. There's never been a game that I've watched, even when Jamal Charles was at his apex, where you didn't have at least a few drives where you ended up, if you were running the ball constantly, with a third and eight or a third and nine. That's just what happens. So the key to me, I think stopping the Gurley on early downs, I think, I could probably help him win. I think this game's won and lost on third down. Thoughts?
I completely agree. And I want to ask you guys a quick question, because this stood out to me when I went through PFF. And folks, if you're not checking out PFF, they're a partner. Check out the links to the site. You can get a little discount when you subscribe to them. But who was the number one rated corner in NFL passer rating in week 10?
Probably Steven Nelson.
You are absolutely right. He gave up a zero NFL quarterback passer rating.
Which, keeping in mind that the quarterback rating, if they just chuck it at the ground over and over, is like 36 or 39.
That's my point. Yes, Josh Rosen was under duress, and he's probably not quite sure what the heck's going on out there. But Steven Nelson is playing at a level that we haven't seen since, you know, maybe Marcus Peters was a rookie.
He's okay, playing here. Here's even better, though, Ryan, to one up that one. Who's number one in the NFL for the first 10 weeks? It's Minkah Fitzpatrick. Steven Nelson is number two. He's ahead of Chris Harris Jr. and Patrick Peterson.
He's done a great job this year.
59 overall in coverage. So,
in the corner group is one of Beach's big accomplishments, because Fuller has played really well the last 3 weeks too, like really, really well. Orlando Scandrick has surpassed everyone's expectations. You hardly ever hear his name at this point, which is a good thing. Steven Nelson's played well, the whole group.
And you would think that Fuller would be a very big cog this week. I'm not so sure he's going to be as big near as important as he would have been if Cooper Kupp was playing. So
I think the slot role continues to be an unbelievably important role. It's just going to be a different player. You know what I mean? I think it is going to be a team against Woods quite a bit. And Woods can really play. I don't think Woods is as good as Kupp, though. I think Kupp, of their three receivers, I think losing Kupp might be your worst-case scenario of those three.
That's a fair argument. But I will say this. Brandon Cooks, if they move him into the slot, that makes me a bit nervous.
He's tough. He's a tough.
Let me ask you this, Seth. Brandon Cooks or Sammy Watkins, who would you rather have?
Based on what I've seen,
yep.
I'd take Watkins. It'd be close, though.
Okay. Well, we gotta get going. Seth, give us your prediction. What do you think is going to end up happening in this game?
I think this game is going to be wild. I think the Chiefs pull out a...
What's your over-under? Over-under 63.5. Are you going over or under?
Over.
Especially in LA.
Yeah, I think in LA, I think it's going to be an over. I think we're talking something like a, 48-42 type game. I really do.
So no defense.
Not a lot of. I think even if the defenses play well in spurts, I still think you're going to see that. I think the Chiefs take it, though.
You heard it here, and I like the game being in LA. I had a quick chance to talk with Amy Trask today, who lives in LA, and she seems to feel that both the NFL took into account moving that game there in order to avoid the field, but also because supposedly the smoke looks to be abating and shouldn't be a factor either. So that's a good thing for that.
Well, and I do like what the Rams are doing. They're giving away thousands of tickets to first responders and people that have been affected by the wildfires. So that, I think that's a classy move as well.
Yeah. It'd be an opportunity for people to see a game that might not otherwise. It's going to be – I do feel for the people that went down to Mexico, though, or that are going down, because airline tickets are not nearly as easy to get refunds on as an NFL game.
Very true. Here's to Therese Paylor. Hope you make it to L.A., buddy. Folks, thanks for listening. That's what we have for today. We'll be back with more on Patrick Mahomes tomorrow, and look for the preview show on Monday. Thank you for listening today. We'll talk to you then.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.